is F1 Debrief, the perfect Bond villain name. On this show, we discuss who's in and who's out at Ferrari, the role of test drivers in 2015, and Sergio's grand plan. I need to talk to you about Ferrari because I can't get my head around all the changes that they've made. They're going through a phase that's like that thing where you change the broom handle so many times and you change the broom head so many times. Is it still the same team?
They, at least the people in charge at Ferrari, recognize that something had to change. So that's a positive step.
Something or everything.
Everything in this case has to change. Unlike, for example, Williams's long-term strategy, it does seem to have happened rather abruptly. It all sort of went wrong when Stefano left. That was the first chink in the armour, the first sign of a real problem.
Yeah. At the start of the year, we had Luca di Montezemolo in charge. Stefano Domenicali was the team principal. We had Kimi Raikkonen and Fernando Alonso as drivers. Out of those, only Kimi Raikkonen is left. Who would have thought he'd be the last man standing?
Not me, actually. That is very interesting. So many changes. Do you have a list of who's out and who is in?
Well, like you said, Domenicali was the first to go. He resigned from his role after poor results, and he was replaced by Marco Mattiacci, who moved across from some kind of car division. And we all said, he's got no F1 experience. What's he going to be able to do?
Sure.
But it took the bosses a long time to also see that.
I quite liked Mattiacci. He seemed like a pretty decent guy who knew what Formula One needed, even if he didn't perhaps know what Ferrari needed.
Yeah, I mean, he was nice, but I miss Stefano.
Mm.
Well, glasses.
No one is going to replace. That guy's a one in a million, right? So having lost him, that's obviously a huge loss for Formula One and for us.
Well, actually, it's not all bad because he's the new president of the FIA's single-seater commission. I'm not sure what they do, but at least he's still involved somewhere in keeping busy.
He's around.
Yeah. So Mattiacci took control and he said he had a plan to switch everything around and Ferrari would be a very different team in 2015. Then we get to the Italian Grand Prix and I don't really know where it came from. It seemed to appear out of nowhere, but suddenly there were all these rumours that Luca di Montezemolo was going to be gone.
He was going to step down. He was going to announce the end of his reign at the at his home Grand Prix, which would make sense. I think he created an awful lot of fuss about it.
It was
a lot of media buzz.
There was a big, everyone was expecting some kind of press conference. There was a big media scrum around the Ferrari motorhome and he stepped out and he's like, what are you all doing here? I have nothing to announce.
And then several days later, he announced that actually he was gone.
It was 3 days, I think.
Was it? Yeah. All of that, actually, the way it went down was very peculiar. It wasn't very professional. It didn't make the guy look particularly organised or, you know whether he's coming or going. At least he was allowed to say, I'm off. He was the one who announced it, but it seemed more like he was pushed.
Yeah, and he was pushed by the CEO of Fiat, Sergio Marchionne, who does sound like a big bad boss.
He does. He has the perfect Bond villain name.
They didn't replace di Montezemolo. Marchionne just took over all his duties. And the day after the season ended, Marco Mattiacci was out with Maurizio Arrivabene taking his place. And I love him because it's the most Italian sounding name.
Give it to me one more time.
Maurizio Arrivabene.
Yeah, he sounds perfect. I don't know what he's like. I don't know what his experience is.
We haven't really seen him because he came in after the season.
He's not been on TV much as yet. Some journalists have met him. And obviously, I think he's the guy who was involved with Philip Morris before.
Yeah.
Taken on this role. So he's got more experience, certainly, than Mattiacci had.
Yeah, well, Marchionne said when they announced him, we decided to appoint Maurizio Arrivabene because at this historic moment in time for the Scuderia and for Formula One, we need a person with a thorough understanding, not just of Ferrari, but also of the governance mechanisms and requirements of the sport. Maurizio has a unique wealth of knowledge. He has been extremely close to the Scuderia for years and, as a member of the F1 Commission, is also keenly aware of the challenges we are facing. He has been a constant source of innovative ideas focused on revitalization of Formula One.
So this guy has been brought in to bend the rules in Ferrari's favour.
I didn't
one would
say
assume.
That.
That's got to be the logical conclusion.
It does sound a bit like that.
Who
would have thought Ferrari would get up to that kind of thing?
They're in it to win it and they're not in it for the benefit of anybody else. And I suspect that was the downfall of the previous guy. And in fact, the downfall of Stefano, because he was involved heavily in FOTA, I think. So both the two previous team bosses could see the bigger picture, but perhaps were lacking focus in terms of Ferrari specific wants and requirements, and weren't so willing to put the team first. This new guy sounds like it's going to be politics all the way.
Well, you say that, and it does look like political appointments, but Marchionne has also said the right kind of thing about bringing Formula One to the fans. He said, otherwise, we risk ending up racing on our own in empty circuits. We must know how to get the most out of the tools used by the new generation, which is how to attract young people and create the chances for fans to interact more with the stars of our sport. Because when they did more reshuffling, which we'll talk about in a minute, they also set up a new digital part of their PR team. So
right.
He does seem to have a bit of forward thinking, not just political.
There's not all
thinking.
Bad news then.
Yeah.
There may be something in it for the fans. There may be something in it, Ferrari fans especially, but Formula One fans in general. He definitely is a guy to keep an eye on, right? These big sweeping changes feel like they've got a permanence about them, and this guy isn't going to be out on his ear in 9 months.
No, but also I don't think we've heard the last of Luca di Montezemolo, because Marchionne has been saying it's all the fault of the previous regime, and Luca's been defending himself,
right,
obviously,
as you would.
And also CVC have said that he's going to be reappointed in his role as non-executive director of the Formula One group.
That's Luca's going to be working for CVC again. He was doing that already, I think. But I would have assumed being out of Formula One would also see him out of CVC.
No, he's clinging on.
I guess he has value, or he offers value to CVC in ways, in terms of like his experience and his knowledge. He's probably quite close to Bernie. That suits Bernie very well. And what suits Bernie goes.
It's not just the big bosses who've been shuffling around. We've also got a lot of engineering changes. Midway through the year, Kimi Raikkonen got a new race engineer, or an old one, because they had to bring someone back from the test team to the race team, I think, someone that he could get on with better.
Okay.
And he'll have another new one next year. They are recruiting David Greenwood from Marussia. It's a name I vaguely know.
Mm-hmm. Dave Greenwood, yep. Yeah, his name rings a bell. So he's coming in to Ferrari. He's a new recruit.
Yeah.
And his role specifically is to appease Kimi Raikkonen, who can be a tricky character.
To work with him.
Okay.
Andrea Stella, who was Fernando Alonso's race engineer, he's going with Alonso to McLaren.
Mm-hmm.
So Sebastian Vettel will get talked around the laps by Ricardo Adami, who he's previously been with at Toro Rosso. So these people, they do like the same voices.
A driver's relationship with his race engineer is key, and I recall Jenson Button being slightly miffed this earlier this season. Midway through the year, his engineer was changed, and it took a while to get the rapport together to work with his engineer so they understand each other. And you can imagine if you're heading around a track at 200 miles an hour, and you know somebody's talking to you mid-corner when you're trying to concentrate, you've got to get on with them. And I'm sure Kimi is not an easy man to get on with, and probably neither is Vettel. Vettel and his previous race engineer, Rocky, obviously had a very strong relationship, and that was key to Sebastian's 4 title challenges. We'll have to see whether or not he can recreate that magic again at Ferrari.
It's good, really, when the race engineers stick with the same drivers, because you get used to hearing the certain voices together, and then you know if you just hear a race engineer, you know, oh, I know who they were talking to.
Yes, a certain familiarity for fans. You get to hear accents and voices. I know Romain Grosjean has an engineer's voice who sticks out. Many partnerships become synonymous with radio traffic and with F1 throughout the years.
Grosjean's race engineer is Japanese, and it's fun to hear them, the Japanese guy talking to the French guy. I always thought there would be communication problems, but they seem to get on really well.
I do wonder whether Ferrari might now lose something. I know a key part of their championship campaigns in the previous years has been their ability to obscure radio information by talking in foreign languages or mixing languages on the fly. And Alonso was very good at that in the past. Without him, maybe Ferrari have lost a key element, a strategic element in their battle. We'll see if maybe Vettel can step up and attempt the same.
The week before Christmas brought some more big changes, with Pat Fry leaving his engineering director role, Nicholas Tombazi leaving his chief designer role, and Hirohide Hamashima exiting his role as tire expert. That one's not quite so big, but I do love saying his name.
They are major changes. Fry especially, huge change. So who are they being replaced with? Are there replacements named already?
Yeah, James Allison is staying as technical director, and I think he's the big boss now. He's joined by chief designer Simone Resta and power unit director Mattia Binotto. And apparently Jock Clear is moving across from Mercedes to take over Pat Fry's engineering role.
but not yet. One would assume there must be a gardening leave or some kind of period. If he's switching from a major team like Mercedes, I bet they've got his contract locked down hard. I wonder how long he'll be sat on the sidelines.
They're quite big changes, but they don't seem to be big names moving into the roles. I don't know if it's a new generation of engineers and designers coming through, or if Ferrari just haven't quite got the pull that they used to have.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a mixture of both, actually. One thing is for certain is that Ferrari totally messed up with their powertrain and engine management system this year. You would expect a manufacturer team that have the ability to meld perfectly the chassis and the aero and the cooling with the engine, the power unit, the gearbox, and all of these new regulations. You would expect manufacturers to be at the forefront and in the box seats for any major regulation change such as we experienced in 2014. Mercedes were the textbook case for that. That team absolutely got it right. They got the best engine and they built it with the best chassis, and it gave them a huge lead on the competition. There is no reason why Ferrari shouldn't have also been in exactly the same position. And for whatever reason, they managed to get it very, very wrong. They weren't aggressive enough with the power units. They seemed to develop them separately and try to put the two together at the very last minute. It didn't seem like a very integrated solution. And then because of that, they ended up where they did in the championship. And they deserved the results they got because they didn't do a good enough job for the rule change. And for that reason, changes have to be made. And now we are seeing that finally happen.
Do you think they want as much of Mercedes as they can get, but Jock Clear is actually all that will come across? They want Toto Wolff and they want Paddy Lowe. All they can get is Jock.
Well, there were rumours that Bob Bell might turn up at Ferrari, but I think they've been quashed very, very recently. You could imagine that he would be a fine hire for them. I mean, Bob Bell was at the forefront of Renault's engine technology when Renault were doing incredibly well in the championship and winning all of Alonso's.
Back in the days when Renault were good.
Hey, it's not been that long, but yeah, it's only been a year, in fairness, that Renault have been bad. It just feels longer. So Bob Bell would be a spectacular hire. Whether or not they can get him, whether or not that will happen, I don't know. But you would think that the more knowledge they can coax away from Mercedes, the better. However, what is the motivation for leaving Mercedes at the moment? Because they are the team to be at. They're where you want to be. If you're an engineer, if you're working on engines or performance or powertrains or whatever, Mercedes seem like the ideal workplace and the place you'd want to stay rather than, you know, go looking for more challenges.
Marchionne has been very upfront about the fact they're going through a lot of changes. He said, 2015 will be a year of reconstruction. In the last few days, we have made some sharp decisions on the makeup of the team, and we know exactly who the key people are for development. We have taken away all the baggage of uncertainty which harmed the start of the work on the 2015 project.
That's a tough way to describe Della Rosa. The baggage of uncertainty. Harsh.
Poor Della Rosa. Yeah, he's out. And we have two new test drivers, Esteban Gutierrez and Jean-Eric Vergne, actually two quite big names.
Massive hires there. That is, well, we know the Ferrari young driver program has been somewhat disrupted by Jules Bianchi's accident at Suzuka this year. He was their protege. He was destined to work his way up to Ferrari. I think he may have been Sauber bound this year. So they've got a major hole to fill in that program. Obviously, those who were working on development of this year's Ferrari weren't doing a good enough job. Maybe it's the problem with the wind tunnel. Maybe it's the problem with the test drivers or whatever. Esteban Gutierrez seems like a pretty decent role. He's still young. He was arguably introduced to Formula One too soon. He was forced into incredibly high-pressure situations and often didn't manage to step up when necessary. Certainly this year, he failed to get on top of Sauber's problems. So it's good to see Ferrari pick him up because you don't want to see that talent walk out the door.
And it makes sense with the Sauber connection.
Mm-hmm.
Vergne seems more of a left field pick.
I was surprised, actually. That was not where I would expect to see him turn up. He's been at Toro Rosso, so he has experience with Italian mentality and Italian ways of working. So he has that connection. It wasn't someone who I would have imagined would naturally fit into this program. And I sort of suspect now they have too many drivers. It feels like they've got one too many.
They've both been hired as test drivers, but Gutierrez is also the reserve driver. I would have had that the other way around because Vergne has more experience and more results.
But Gutierrez was hired first and is slightly younger. amazingly, given that Verne is no old man by any stretch. Gautier is the younger of the two, I guess, has got the better long-term prospects, maybe? Difficult call, that one. Verne would seem like a more obvious choice for a third driver, but it's not like they get called on that often.
This is true.
What Ferrari need, more than anything, and where these two may come into play, is Ferrari need more in-season testing. And this is where the politics game will come into play. Because, as you know, Ferrari have their own test track right on their doorstep. And the thing that gave them the edge during their years of domination were the hours and days and weeks of testing they could squeeze in between races and learn the most about their car and optimize every part of it. And that allowed Michael Schumacher to dominate the way he did when he was at Ferrari. Since testing or mid-season testing has been reduced or in seasons gone by often removed completely, it hurt Ferrari more than any other team. Now, I wouldn't be surprised with all these changes at the top of Ferrari if very soon it's announced that more in-season testing will be available and then progressively more and more year on year. And that should allow Ferrari to utilize their test drivers to the maximum and get the most out of their package. Because once they can do that, they've got an advantage that no other team can have. And that's exactly the way Ferrari like it.
So they've got a long-term plan in terms of testing. They also need a long-term plan in terms of drivers. Vettel presumably does fit into their long-term goals, but yep. I can't see that Kimi does.
Well, he, like as you said, he's basically the only person who's got a long-term rock-solid contract, presumably that they can't extricate him from or don't have anyone who might fit into that seat better. I mean, if you take Kimi out of the equation, who else is on the market that would do as good a job as he, in theory, should do in a decent Ferrari?
Maybe they just think if they get rid of him, he'll keep coming back. He does that.
It costs them a fortune to get rid of him, and he still ends up in the team years later.
But he hasn't lived up to the big comeback. This year in particular, he's been really bad.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the same will be true next year. I mean, Sebastian Vettel is a guy who's struggling for form. He would hate it if Kimi Raikkonen managed to get the better of him. You know, that would really upset his long-term plans, and Ferrari perhaps don't want that to happen. It wouldn't hurt Ferrari's future plans if Sebastian Vettel was faster than Kimi Raikkonen, you know, and his confidence was boosted because of that. Even if the car ends up being sixth or seventh on the grid for the entire of 2015, as long as Sebastian Vettel is in front of Kimi Raikkonen when it matters, I suspect all will be harmonious in that team.
I see how it goes then. So it's Vettel beats Kimi, Kimi gets disgruntled and leaves, then they can promote Gutierrez or Verne, and then they've got Vettel as number one and that as number two. And that's just how it was when they were really successful.
That sounds like a recipe for success. Maybe there is method to this madness. Right then, now that you know how Ferrari stacks up roughly, that's the broad strokes of the new regime. What do you think is going to work? Have they got the right recipe? Are they going to be able to climb their way to the top? Where do you expect them to be in 2015 and then 2016 and beyond?
The trouble is, they've made a lot of changes and that's going to take some time to gel together. And they haven't seemed to have much patience. I mean, they've been through 3 team principals in 2014.
Yep.
If they can have some patience and let these changes start to work, then I think it must improve. I mean, it can't get worse for them, surely.
They've got a chance to improve the engine and the power unit over the off season. They have to make the absolute maximum from that now. They've seen what Mercedes can do. They know what the benchmark is. They know what they're aiming for. That's a good thing. They've got an excuse in the early part of the coming season because everybody knows there's changes left, right, and centre, and there's a lot to learn and people to figure out their new roles. James Allison is obviously continuing. I doubt he had too much time to get his to make the changes he desired in the 2014 chassis. So now he's got his big chance on the 2015 version. We know he's good from Lotus. It was a brilliant car that he oversaw in 2013. So in theory, then, will we see a race win from Ferrari this coming year?
I don't really see that happening. I mean, if it did happen, it depends on Mercedes and their dominance and all that. But if it did happen, it would have to be towards the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And by then, everyone else is starting to catch up as well. So it would be more difficult for them. No, I can't see it.
I think they should be aiming for podiums. At the minimum, by the regular podiums by the end of 2015 would be a decent benchmark for Ferrari. Anything more is asking too much, and anything less is underperforming. That's my take on it.
They really want to be as Williams were this year.
That would be ideal. That would be amazing, actually. Williams this year managed to score a pole position, and I will be surprised if we see either Kimi or Vettel take up the front row at any time.
I am finding it really difficult to make predictions for next year. I bet our listeners could do a better job.
It's a tiny bit early to be asking for outright predictions, but if anybody has any feedback on anything we've discussed today, if there's anyone we missed out in the grand Ferrari reshuffle, because there may
be... Easily done.
There could be outliers, you know, it's very hard to keep track of this. Do get in touch. All the usual outlets apply. Contact form?
sidepodcast.com/contact.
Email?
christine@sidepodcast.com.
Voicemail?
01212887225.
Social media?
Twitter, @sidepodcast. Facebook/sidepodcast. Pinterest?
All of the Flipboard, places.
Anywhere.
We look forward to hearing from you. We insist you get in touch. We've done plenty of shows during this past week, and there's been a lot to catch up on. You must have some opinion on something we've discussed, be it Ferrari or any of the previous shows. Do your bit, take part, have your say, and we look forward to hearing what you think.